Heinrich Kramer was an exceptional missionary, lay missionary, out of the Dutch church, who spent most of his adult life away from his native Holland in Indonesia. When the Second World War broke out and the lights were going out all over Europe, and the Gestapo were marching through the streets of Holland, sending Dutch Jews to places called Buchenwald and Dachau, a group of Dutch laypersons came to see Heinrich Kramer. They came late at night. They said, "Dr. Kramer, please tell us what we are to do. Our neighbors are dying. We don't know what's going to become of us as a nation. Please, if you can, tell us what we are to do. We have got to do something, and we've got to do it now." And Heinrich Kramer said to them, and these are his words, "I will not tell you what to do. I will tell you who you are. For if you know who you are, then you will know what to do." And he reached over and picked up his Bible and opened it to 1 Peter, and he began to read, "For you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a dedicated nation, a people claimed by God as his own, called to proclaim the triumphs of him who has called you out of darkness and into his marvelous light." He closed his Bible, looked up. "Do you know who you are?" he asked. "Then you will know what to do." And that night they went out and formed the Dutch resistance. When I am faced with a difficult decision, when I am presented with an awkward dilemma, I often return to that marvelous statement of Heinrich Kramer's, "For if you know who you are, then you will know what to do." I remember it in moments when I am seeking to be grounded, when I am needing to be anchored, to connect with who I am, to be the person God calls me to be. The word for what I'm describing is, of course, integrity. Integrity in its original sense, meaning that I am in harmony with myself, that my thinking, my feeling, and my acting are in sync. They are congruent with each other. Integrity comes from the Latin integer, that means whole, complete, integrated. When my beliefs and my convictions and my thoughts and my actions are integrated into parts of the whole of my life. Integrity involves taking the personality that was mine from birth and integrating the values and the wisdom that are at the heart of my faith and of my belief. Integrity always involves character, which I love how my dictionary defines. It's number 2 or 3 down there, but it defines character as moral excellence. So first, integrity involves understanding and being the person God created me to be. Then it involves discerning and following the path to which I feel called at this moment of my life. Integrity relies on internal consistency. Integrity isn't just not telling a lie. Integrity is not lying to myself. It's more than telling the truth. It's being true to who I am. Integrity is to strive to be true to the person I was created to be in the whole of my life, in my spiritual life, in my marriage, in my family, in my vocation, picking up the laundry, buying the groceries. Integrity calls me to be who I am across the whole sweep of my life. Who I am at my finest and at my most authentic. For if you know who you are, then you will know what to do. St. Paul was struggling with this very issue of integrity when he wrote, and I bet you love the openness and the honesty of this passage as much as I do. He wrote, I do not understand my own actions, for I do not do what I want, and the very thing I do is what I hate. Now, we've got a brother there. Now, at the other extreme of integrity, at the other pole, is the word that Jesus used so scathingly, hypocrisy. It comes from the Greek word hypokrites, meaning divided. But it gets more interesting than that. Hypokrites is also the word that was used to refer to actors. Hypokrites, that's the name for actors. It wasn't meant critically, it was just meant descriptively. That is the word for hypocrisy, and that is the word for actors, one who is pretending to be what he is not, one who is divided from his or her own true self. A hypocrite becomes a thespian. Or I've always loved the way J.R. Ewing said it. He said, once you get past integrity, the rest is a piece of cake. Don't think that's the direction we want to head. Integrity means wholeness, completeness, integrating all of who I am into one whole. Hypocrisy means divided, acting, pretending to be something that at my heart and soul I am not. But now here's what's spooky. The actor doesn't always know that he's acting. No, we don't, do we? The actor may be simply living out his social role, doing it the way it's always been done, doing it the way he was taught to do it, but never engaging in his own discernment, never hearing his soul's voice, the voice of God, the yearning of his own integrity. One of the things I love about this church is how it encourages us to think. It will not slam a certain theological stance down our throats. This place encourages us to think, to discern, to discover who God is for me and for you in your and my lives. I guess it might be easier if someone were to just tell me who God is supposed to be in my life, but it would have so much less meaning. And missing the struggle of the discernment, it would have so much less integrity. Our text today is about this theme. It's about as familiar as a text gets. It's the story of the younger son, the prodigal son, as he's often called. Now let's agree to something. Let's agree that we're going to look at it today with fresh eyes. Let's agree we're not going to be so tough on him today. He simply wanted to experience life. Did he intend to crash and burn? Of course not. As a fine Jewish young man was feeding pigs a part of his vocational career ladder? I don't think so. He was just a kid trying to grow up, just like the rest of us, experiencing life, trying things out, discovering who he was. And in so doing, he made some mistakes. some were serious mistakes. In trying to discover who he was, he became disconnected from who he was. And in Jesus' brilliant use of irony and humor to show how disconnected he was, he had this young Jewish man feeding pigs. I've certainly been there. Fortunately, there were no pigs involved. Started out with the best of intentions, launched into some new venture only to discover it wasn't me. It may have been a fine path for somebody else, but not for me. I didn't fit there. I didn't belong. It didn't have integrity for me. So here this young man sits, probably on a fence, overlooking a field of pigs, staring down at a handful of corn, about as lost a soul as you'll ever find, about as disconnected from who he was as anyone you will ever see. And at that moment, Jesus said, he came to himself. He came to himself. Suddenly, it wasn't corn into which he was looking. He was looking into a mirror. He was looking into his heart and soul, and he remembered who he was. He came to himself. He went from being divided to being reconnected. He hopped off the fence, he dropped the corn, and he walked straight into the life he had been created to live. For if you know who you are, you will know what to do. That younger son is going to have to share some time on that fence with each of us from time to time. Sometimes we get lost. Sometimes badly. We forget who God created us to be. Sometimes not so badly. It just feels like we missed a turn somewhere. Into my office walks a middle-aged woman, a fine lady in many ways. But if you look carefully into her eyes, you can see it. You can see the emptiness. How does the country song put it? The lights are on, but nobody's home. It's called depression. She started out with so many dreams, with so much hope. But something happened. Maybe she got too caught up in the social whirl of becoming a Buckhead Betty. Or maybe her husband leaned on her and pressured her to be who he wanted her to be. But somehow, her spirit broke, or her priorities got distorted, and she finds herself sitting on that same fence with the prodigal, wondering what went wrong, wondering where her life went awry. Well, the fella on the fence, the prodigal, I can help you with where his life went awry. He was looking for a shortcut to feeling good. Often it's the wrong turn we all make. The point in much of faithful living isn't does it feel good, but does it feel right? Now, in those times in our lives when there's a decision to make, and what feels good and what feels right are the same thing, then we've got it made. But in those dilemmas in life, when what feels good and what feels right are two separate choices. We've got to go with what feels right. What has integrity? What is based on a life of character? I live with a teacher. I'm going to tell you a secret. She's getting a little weary of parents' obsession with self-esteem. Karen says that genuine self-esteem can come only when something is done to be esteemed. In other words, you can't give it away. It's got to be deserved. She'd like to see parents focus more on developing young lives of character. You see, character and integrity are the primary issues. Once they are engaged, self-esteem is bound to follow. It's the same with happiness. I see all kinds of people who are pursuing happiness and are failing beautifully in the effort. You can't achieve happiness by pursuing it. The way you do it is to go back to the foundation. The way you do it is you pursue integrity, you pursue character, you pursue genuine meaning in life. And then you will have all the happiness you can stand. Character, integrity. Discerning who you are, asking yourself, what do you value? What do you believe? What is important? What is precious? What is sacred to you? Discerning who you are, and then where and to what do you feel called at this very moment of your life? It often means to pause in the quiet with everything electronic turned off, to listen, to discern, to be still and know. For if you know who you are, sometimes that discovery is easy. It slaps us in the face with its clarity. At other times, God is so frustrating with that still, small voice of His. You know how funny Charles Gardner can be. This winter, I was graciously asked by the staff if I would do the narration for those beautiful devotionals they had written for the Lenten booklet, so it would also be available on CD. You remember the CDs. Well, we had scheduling difficulties, and we were down to the very last minute to do the recording of it. Scheduled a time. 10 o'clock one Friday morning in February. Charles was heading up the project, so Charles was there along with an excellent technician named Josh and myself. We sit down to do the recording, and we do the recording for about 7 minutes worth. It takes a couple of hours because there are lots of times in there that I had missteps. I would stumble over a word or just knew I could say the word better, the sentence better. So what Josh told me is, since it was digitally recorded, he said, we're not going to rewind when we have a redo. You just keep on going. You just say, again, Josh, and do it again, and I'll come back and edit out those places. So that's what we did. Packed up, ready to leave. I knew we were in trouble when Josh said, gosh, I have got to go. I have only 2 hours to edit this whole thing before I've got to FedEx it down to Florida. I knew how much editing he had to do. We got our final copies a couple of weeks later, and I listened to it. And Josh did a beautiful job for the time that he had. But there were two times toward the end of the CD, you may have noticed, two times toward the end of the CD, I hear me read a passage, and then I hear the words, "Again, Josh," and it's repeated. Well, I go up to Charles's office, and I tell Charles about this, and Gardner sits there and has the biggest grin that comes across his face. And Charles says, "Ron, just picture it. Here is this guy riding down the highway listening to our Lenten CD, and he hears this passage of Scripture, and then he hears, 'Again, Josh,' and he hears the passage repeated, and his name just happens to be Josh." Well, whether God speaks with that much clarity or not, discernment is our first task. And then, having discerned who I am, it's time for me to act. It's time for me to give traction to what I have discovered. Stephen Carter, in his excellent book entitled Integrity, says integrity begins with first discerning what is right and wrong, and then acting on what you have discerned, even at personal cost. Having discerned who we are, then it's time for us to act. I was waiting at gate 32 out at Atlanta Airport. Zones 1 and 2 were called. I stood, picked up my briefcase, and started walking to get in line, and I walked past this row of seats where other passengers were still seated. I walked past a mother and a daughter, and I hear the girl say to her mother, "Do I stand up now?" Something about her voice got my attention. You could tell she was developmentally disabled. I walked on, got in line, got on the plane, took my place in seat 7C right there on the aisle. Looked up, and here walking down the aisle was this girl. She was a little older than I thought she was. She was probably in her mid-teens, but she was very petite, almost frail. The seat directly in front of mine was hers. She took her place. Then Animal House boarded. This great group of college kids gets on the plane, a huge great group of college kids, and they take up most of the left side of the plane. They were laughing, talking, having absolutely the best time, but above all else, they were being cool. Cool was imperative. Planes loaded, they push us back, we taxi for the runway, and of course we get in line with the other planes. And then finally, it's our turn, and as the pilot is making that last turn onto the runway on which we would take off, I see this little head with the brunette hair lean part way across the aisle. And I hear her say to the college student sitting across the aisle from her, "I get real nervous when we take off. Would you hold my hand?" Wow. My eyes were absolutely riveted on him to see what he would do. And suddenly he looked about as nervous as she did. He paused for a moment, his face flushed, and then it relaxed. And then halfway across the aisle came this kid's big old hand. Her tiny little hand reached over and grabbed it. And there they sat, holding hands as our Delta jet was airborne. There they sat, holding hands as all of his friends stared in disbelief. There they held hands as I too stared in disbelief and memorized that sacred moment. I knew I was witnessing a sacrament. The plane takes off, the wheels clunk beneath us. She lets go of his hand, says something to him, but the engines are now far too loud, I can't hear her. For the next hour and a half, he read his Harry Potter book and she listened to her iPod. Then we began the descent for our approach into Shreveport. And in those few moments, just before the jolt of the runway, I look over and see this college student turn back to her, and reading his lips, he says, "Do you need to hold my hand again?" Apparently she said no, and he smiled and nodded. Having discerned who we are, it is then time to act. It may not be cool for a young man in college to hold hands with a disabled girl, but he was responding to a voice within him, the voice of his integrity. For if you know who you are, you will know what to do. When I look back on the regrets of my life, most are not from moments in which I did something so wrong or hurtful, but are from the times that something was called for. Some word, some action, some deed, and from within me, I heard my very soul's voice calling me to act. And I did nothing. Out of my passivity came my hypocrisy, feeling one way, doing the other, not whole, but divided. Benjamin Franklin said it so beautifully, as we must account for every idle word, so must we account for every idle silence. Live with integrity. Live intentionally. Live authentically. Live boldly. Leave nothing on the table. Let there be very few regrets. Elie Wiesel tells the story out of the Hasidic Jewish tradition of a rabbi by the name of Zusia. Zusia was a very private man, a man, as he puts it, who concealed more than he revealed. Near the end of his life, Zusia stood before his synagogue and said, "When I die and face the celestial tribunal, I do not fear that they will ask me, 'Zusia, why were you not Moses?' Because I will say to them, 'Moses was a great leader, and I am not.' Nor do I fear they will ask me, 'Zusia, why were you not Jeremiah?' Because I will say to them, 'Jeremiah was a great prophet, and I am not.' Nor do I fear they will ask me, 'Zusia, why were you not Rabbi Akiba?' Because I will say to them, 'Rabbi Akiba was a great teacher, and I am not.' But I do fear that they will ask me, 'Zusia, why were you not Zusia?' For to that I will have no answer. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.